This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 14th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 251. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the view from Bowen Island, Jim Mullen joins me from his slice of paradise in the middle of Howe Sound to sound off on political football and football of the gridiron variety. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. We're going to Bowen Island, British Columbia for the view from Bowen with Jim Mullen. He's the president of Football Canada, the general secretary of the International Federation of American Football, and the host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN. Bowen Island is a slice of paradise in Howe Sound, just a short ferry ride away from Horseshoe Bay in West Vancouver. Municipal elections are coming on October 15th across British Columbia. In Vancouver, public safety, homelessness, housing affordability, those are the issues. But I asked Jim about Bowen Island issues of growth and the environment. A new regional park is planned for Bowen, and there are also concerns about a new liquefied natural gas plant being built further north in Howe Sound.
Well, let's start off with the regional park. And one of the new additions to Bowen will be the concept of overnight camping. We don't really have it here. We don't have campsites, and in this new regional park, which is down on Cape Roger Curtis, this $40 million acquisition by the GVRD is buying a large chunk of developers' property in an area where there's a ton of biodiversity and even some endangered species. And the plan is for 100 campsites to be made available via reservation and first come, first serve. I think there does need to be personally, some accommodation for people wanting to camp. I have issues adding an extra 100 car loads or bike loads or whatever to the ferry service right now, which is as we've expanded on Bowen over the last 5 years or so, and especially during COVID, the ferries have become highly taxed in terms of usage. When we first moved here 6 years ago, there was a population of around 3,700. We've added almost 1,000 people to that total, and of course during the summertime. The history of this place is that it's a summer spot. This is a place for second homes, and the population even 5-10 years ago would go up to about 10,000 over the summer. Bowen's the size of Vancouver proper, from Boundary Road all the way out to UBC, so it can certainly handle those sorts of numbers in theory. But the infrastructure isn't quite there. I mean, there's a trunk road that goes straight through the middle of the island that takes you east-west, and a number of spur roads that come off of it. So there's a lot of concerns online right now by the citizenry who like to get in a lather about anything, because they're islanders, and they've got questions. Some are out and out opposed to a regional park. But, I'll push those to the side right now, because some of those people will be opposed to just about anything. But I think the questions that come up about the impact of growth, the number of people potentially in a zone with biodiversity, Although, you know, if that area was fully developed by the offshore developer that was in that space, there would have been even more of an impact on biodiversity in that area. I think with all of those voices coming in, this is going to be an interesting battle, and I think it's going to flow back into the municipal election that's coming up here. Now, you know, an interesting thing about Bowen Island too. I think we might be one of the most overgoverned areas in the province. Not only do we have a muni, not only are we in the GVRD, not only do we, of course, have federal and provincial authorities, but we also have the Islands Trust. I have yet to see what the Islands Trust actually does in this space. I know they draw something. I know they get together and talk about things. And I know that we have a dedicated group of people on the island that like to distribute hyperbolic unsigned leaflets that that kind of look like ransom letters ranting about the island's trust, and some of it seems quite rational to complain about. But you know, when you have that much crossover and overlap with government, I'm surprised anything gets done here, which allows me to segue and switch gears into development. And there's a lot of development going on this island right now. In the particular area that I'm in Eagle Cliff, it's increased tenfold. We've got a home that's going up on a property, an acre that sold for $100,000 because it was on a cliffside. It's all steel and concrete destruction. The widest cantilevered property in Canada is being built there right now. And it starts at 7 a.m. and it ends at 8 p.m. And it has been a racket for months now. And there's been a lot of those situations. There's the potential for extensive development up at Hood Point, which is kind of an exclusive area, just about 5 minutes up the road from us. We're not that exclusive here. And there's been a steady flow of tradespeople speeding up in that direction. And of course, Mid-Island, there's been some development as well, quite frankly, clustered around a regional park. So there's been great expansion here over a short period of time. And as I mentioned before, I think it's because individuals found that they could work from home, but then they thought that they could commute from Bowen Island. And as we started to get back to normal after that first phase of the pandemic, commuting isn't all it's cracked up to be when you have a 120 car ferry. It was built for an island where there were 3,000 people who just needed it for necessity, not an everyday type thing. So the ferries this summer have been a unique challenge in comparison to other years.
And of course, the BC Ferries unofficial slogan is expect delays. But when it comes to BC Ferries, there will be even bigger boats in Howe Sound if a foreign-owned liquefied natural gas plant gets its way. It's Woodfibre LNG near Squamish, the former pulp mill, which does have a cash and benefits and jobs deal, land deal with the First Nations, the Squamish Nation. But this is going to be an issue in the upcoming election for voters in West Vancouver, for voters in Squamish, and for voters in Lions Bay and on Bowen Island. What is the talk of the island when it comes to the LNG plant and the big ships that will come and go to take the LNG to Asia?
Well, just to put it into perspective, over my shoulder here is the mouth of Horseshoe Bay. You can't see into Horseshoe Bay there. We have about a 3.5 kilometer crossing that takes 18 minutes. So right in between there is a shipping channel that we get, you know, the odd C-SPAN tug, the odd log boom, the odd ship that that carries raw logs. The LNG ships that are going to go through that area have been estimated to be about six times the size of those. And I don't think people know what's coming, quite frankly. And so, you know, if we're talking about that short of crossing, we're guaranteed that we'll have ships as close as less than a kilometer from the shoreline, right behind us here, if they're on their way out of here. And there is some pressure mounting now. I've seen it. I guess they're tuned into my regional algorithm in terms of starting to mount a campaign against this. I'm not sure it can be stopped. That being said, the people on Bowen Island are diverse, but there are some very influential people here that have been able to change public policy. You know, the empty, the homes tax, the speculation tax, for some reason, it doesn't apply here. We know that there's summer homes here, but at the same time, in the second wave of it, it applies to Lions Bay, but it doesn't apply to Bowen Island. It was originally supposed to apply to Bowen Island, but there are influential people here that made sure that that didn't happen. If there are influential people here that really want to assert themselves to maintain the lifestyle of this place, to maintain home values and real estate values, that level of people will quietly start making some noise off the radar, so we don't have to worry about what's on the radar here in a couple of years with giant bombs going floating beside our homes.
And speaking of bombs, speaking of long bombs, put on your football hat, as you are the president of Football Canada. This is perhaps the best time of the year. This is mid-season for the CFL, preseason for the NFL, for people who have football pools. University and high school football are just around the corner in a few weeks. Of course, Football Canada, the national teams, have been out there playing internationally. Give us a bit of a sketch of where things are, where Football Canada is, and where Canadians are in terms of football, both on either side of the border.
I was just laughing. That may be the best segue I've heard this year. to go from bombs of death to bombs of play over in the football side. Let's talk a little bit about where we're at. I think the biggest story when it comes to football in this country is what's going on outside of this country. And that's the number of Canadian athletes that are playing at NCAA schools. When I switched our coverage from looking exclusively at Canadian schools to also including the NCAA schools, there are about 65 guys playing Division I football. And they weren't necessarily in skilled positions. It was about, 5 years ago. Now there's 203, and we haven't done our new count yet. We know they can probably go up to about 230. You've got high round picks in guys like John Metchie III, who was the Cornish Trophy winner 2 years in a row, receiver out of Alabama, national champion there. Unfortunately, sidelined due to a heart condition when he was in grade 11, and now sidelined due to a form of leukemia, which is very treatable, but at the same time, he won't be playing with the Houston Texans this year. So he's had challenges in his life. He's always overcome them. I think he'll be able to overcome this one. At least we hope so, with the best of care possible. But back to the Canadians and the NCAA, it's been a bit of a revolution for the sport and for where athletes can aspire to. And I think we see one manifestation of that, come up a couple of years ago with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Chase Claypool, who played all of his high school and all of his minor ball in Abbotsford before he went to Notre Dame and is now, a top patch catcher with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Nathan Rourke with the BC Lions, also a guy that won the Cornish Trophy as the top Canadian player in the NCAA for 2 years running, first two Cornish Awards, actually. He played quarterback at Ohio, not Ohio State, Ohio. And we're talking about Athens, Ohio, a place where no roads lead to. It's really in an isolated place, a true university town. And you know, he was in many aspects looked at as the best quarterbacking prospect coming out of the MAC since Ben Roethlisberger. And when his draft year came up a couple of years ago, he was the top quarterback that did not receive a UDFA agreement from an NFL team. He did get a brief look from the New York Giants as a receiver, but didn't get signed. And one of the reasons was, the NFL scouting bureau had questions about his velocity in terms of his mechanics and his ability to deliver a deep ball and B, deliver a ball over the middle and over the seam. His running ability was never in question. As we've seen with the Lions this year, he's an extremely mobile quarterback when he wants to be. He understands his offense, understands his reads, understands his checkdowns, and the delivery on his ball is answering any questions. There's a window that opens up for CFL players to go to NFL tryouts. I've been saying that all year long. Go out and see this guy while you can here, because this guy's going to the NFL. He's gone down the path, has a level of dedication, has the mind, great family that supports him. It's too bad we probably can't find a way to keep him in Lions Orange for a longer period of time. But I think once he's gone, he's gone. The one of the good news pieces is that for our Cornish Trophy watch list, one of the individuals that we're looking at is a quarterback out of Ohio, and his name is Rourke, and his name is Curtis Rourke. So there's another one waiting there that's in the pipeline. And if I'm the BC Lions, when he becomes draft eligible, I'm drafting that kid. He's a different quarterback than his older brother. He's bigger in the pocket. He's about 6 foot, just under 6 foot five, more of a drop back passer, but you know, having met the family at the Cornish Trophy presentation a couple of years ago, what a great family. Got their heads screwed on straight, in there for the right reasons, really dedicated to their kids. And the kids are highly dedicated, focused, and they're clear thinkers. It's really a good news story for Canadian football to have guys like that playing the number one position in the way they do.
Now, there's two Rourkes you talked about, and there's also two Birminghams this year. Two Birminghams with multi-sport games. You had the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham, England. There were also the World Games in Birmingham, USA, Birmingham, Alabama. You went there because one of the many sports at the World Games was football. So tell me a bit about going to the World Games, which don't get even a sliver of the attention of the Olympics or even the Commonwealth Games, but there really are a showcase of amateur sport and up-and-coming sport.
Yeah, basically the World Games serve as a AAA of global sports that aren't in the Olympic Games. And in some cases, it's almost like a dress rehearsal to try to position yourself if you are an international sports organization to get considered and get out in front of games organizers, future games organizers, and the IOC. And I think that's part of the effort with IFAF, the International Body for American Football, around the World Games. There was a flag competition there for both men's and women's. It was played at historic Legion Field, former home of the Birmingham Barracudas of the Canadian Football League, and as Matt Dunnigan would say, Barracuda. trust me, he said that to me. It was a great setup for the sport. Wasn't necessarily well attended. Legion Field is not in the greatest of neighborhoods these days. It was kind of an eye opener for a boy from up north to go and see that, even though I've been in the southern United States before. But the field is pristine. The building's well kept. And the football that we saw of the flag variety, it's a lot like soccer in this aspect. When you see flag football played at its very top level, it's fantastic. When you start drilling down levels, it's not so good. So when you get 20,000 leagues below the sea with either soccer or flag football, it's the same sort of thing, right? Seeing it at its top level, both on the men's and women's side, was pretty special. Seeing the broadcast presentation, finally figuring out how to present flag football, was pretty good. It's for those who haven't watched it much, if you've watched volleyball and then you go watch beach volleyball and you see how reducing the numbers makes it a quicker game with different angles and different paths of communications and different strategies, it's comparable in that sense. Probably more so than comparing 5-on-5 basketball to 3-on-3 basketball. It does miss the hitting. Grabbing a flag certainly doesn't close a playoff the same type of impact as a hit does. But like I say, when it's played at the top level, there's no shortage of athleticism. The United States beat Italy on the men's side for the gold medal. That wasn't a surprise. But I think the biggest surprise of the tournament was Mexico getting out to a 39-0 lead over the United States on the women's side. The Mexican side was unstoppable. They were the most dominant team of the tournament, men's or women's side. And I think it speaks to the potential of flag football to be a marketing tool for the gridiron game wherever it exists in the world. Because all you're talking about is playing five-a-side football on a small field. You don't need equipment. All you need is a couple of flags and a football and a very short playbook and a couple of good athletes, and you can play this thing anywhere. This is the path in my mind to firmly establish football in Africa. This is the path in my mind to establish football in China and Korea and parts of Asia where they've struggled with the tackle game. Even though China has an indoor league, like an arena football league that is exclusively tackles. It's been going for a number of years. The rich football countries can handle the tackle game. The Japans, the Australias, Canada, Mexico, and the European countries in the United States. Outside of that, the next wave of growth for football has to be flag. And if IFAF can take the strides necessary, and I need to remind everybody, I'm also general secretary of IFAF, so that's why I was in Birmingham leading a meeting around this with all the international delegates. It's the next frontier for growth of the game, and it can grow equally on both sides of both men and women.
And speaking of flags, waving the flag of the NDP is David Eby and, of course, Angeli Apadurai, who is now in the contest to replace John Horgan, who is throwing in the towel. Who's retiring from the premiership in this fall. It's a long transition in many ways. David Eby looks like the spot-on favorite. But again, we're in this state of transition at a time when I think BC needs some leadership with all the challenges we're facing. What do you think of this race or lack of race and about David Eby, you know, on his way to replacing John Horgan?
First of all, I'll speak from the position of being someone who's trying to lead a national sports organization. I think in John Horgan stepping aside, we're losing one of the biggest friends to sport in BC that we've had in decades. But like an actual individual who understands through his love of lacrosse and his connection to local teams, be it the Lions, the Canucks, and junior hockey and rugby in his community of Langford, that we're losing someone who kind of understands what the challenges are of not just sports at that top level, but the challenges of sports through the higher amateur levels as well. So you know, I see that as a minus, quite frankly. That being said, you know, I'm surprised about two things about the NDP race. One is that there is almost complete caucus solidarity behind David Eby, and this looks like there was an on-ramp for about 2 years or 3 years behind it because it's so well organized. The other part is that when Nathan Cullen came to provincial politics, I thought they were grooming him as the guy. I really did. I thought he had a number of things going for him in terms of communications, in terms of Nathan Cullen on the Indigenous file, in terms of him being a candidate that could connect outside of Vancouver, because probably the next election, we're going to have similar patterns kind of on one side of the Fraser and on the island. But when you start venturing out of those areas, I think that's where the current government kind of crosses into a bit of a gray area, depending on how well the BC Liberals or whatever their name is going to be when they get into that election under Kevin Falcon campaigns and what sort of hand they play. So I was very surprised that this wasn't a race. I think a race actually resets and revitalizes a party. But, you know, if we look at the polls, this isn't necessarily a party that maybe needs revitalization. It's not a party that is being forced to go to a leadership convention because they're in trouble in the polls. They're handling the polls fairly well, considering where they're at in their mandate. So I'd like to see more of a race because I'd like to see more of an exchange of ideas. And I'd also like to see more individuals step up because I want to see what the cabinet's going to look like moving forward. I want to see what sort of talent is on those benches. If you want to watch an election on civic election night, watch Bowen Island. The last civic election, the mayor won by one vote. And me and my partner had just recently moved to the island. We voted in one direction. I'm not going to say which direction, but we could have either crowned or eliminated that particular individual. Okay. So you're talking to a swing vote house on Bowen Island.
Jim Mullen, add Kingmaker to his bio.
That was The View from Bowen Island with Jim Mullen. He's the president of Football Canada, general secretary of the International Federation of American Football, and the host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwanese shipment blocked by Chinese customs for not having Taiwan China label. In 2015, China began requiring Taiwanese imports to be labeled as originating from Taiwan China, or other wordings that point to Taiwan being part of China, according to CNA. However, the rules were not strictly enforced until U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan last week. The Customs Administration said on August 5th that a Taiwanese company had asked for assistance after one of its shipments was blocked by Chinese customs for not following labeling requirements. The company said it was told that declaration documents for the shipment needed to say it came from Taiwan, China. In Kyoto News, 42% of major firms see Japan economy slowing down on rising prices. The survey of 114 companies, including Toyota Motor Corp and SoftBank Group Corp, found that Japanese blue chips are becoming increasingly pessimistic about the country's economic outlook, up from 12% at the beginning of the year. Meanwhile, those that believe Japan's economy will expand dropped to 55% from 90% 1 year ago, and 84% earlier this year, as concerns weighed on hopes for a gradual recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai files legal bid to stop National Security Police searching his phones. Sly, along with six other former staff members of Apple Daily and its parent company Next Digital, have been charged under the Beijing-imposed national security law as well as a colonial-era sedition law. Since being denied bail in December 2 years ago, Lai has been sentenced to 20 months in jail over protest-related cases, including over the 2020 banned Tiananmen vigil.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, major organized crime ring trafficking in $22 million worth of stolen catalytic converters busted in Oregon. Police officials said the organized crime ring was centered in the Portland area, but also spanned six Oregon counties and the states of Washington, Nevada, California, Texas, and New York. The investigation began in late 2021 when detectives said Tenor Lee Helbush, 32, of Beaverton, was running an illegal fencing operation by posing as a legitimate business buying and selling catalytic converters. Helbush's arrest led detectives to the person they believe is the top of the crime enterprise, Brennan Patrick Doyle, 32, of Lake Oswego. In the Spokane Spokesman Review, Spokane County spending $2 million to fight scum, literally. Green, goopy, gross lake scum, that is. The county commissioners plan to use $2.1 million to build a new system for combating algae blooms at Newman Lake. County taxpayers won't be paying for it directly. The money is coming out of the $101 million Spokane County got through the American Rescue Plan, a stimulus bill Congress passed last year to help the country recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Algae aren't inherently bad. They're essential for many aquatic ecosystems and form the base of lake food chains. For instance, algae feed zooplankton, which in turn feed fish, but an overabundance of algae can wreak ecological and recreational havoc. In the Times Colonist, BC motorists with peeling license plates subject to $230 fine. Plates most affected by the problem made between 2007 and 2012, ICBC brokers are offering free replacements. According to the provincial law, a number plate must be kept entirely unblocked and free from dirt or foreign material so that the numbers and letters on it may be plainly seen and read at all times. In March, ICBC announced it was discontinuing the use of license plate decals, which indicate the day an insurance policy expires.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
Summerland, BC, for keeping alive the memory of playwright and author George Riga, the son of Ukrainian immigrants who wrote about people on the prairies and featured indigenous characters. It's George Riga Weeks. That's right. Weeks from August 8th to 22nd across British Columbia.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 14th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 14th of August in 1980, Lech Walesa led a strike at shipyards in Gdansk, Poland? Walesa's Solidarity Movement helped end communism. He was Poland's president from 1990 to 1995. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news, and you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.